So let's talk about the band a bit and what it meant to you and to Fernandina in those days. You said the 30s?
Yeah. Yeah. We had our little George E. Grant post. Can't remember what number the post was. George E. Grant on our white shirt, short sleeve shirt, and a purple stripe down our white pants. You know, that was our uniform. My mother could get my uniform and my brother's uniform ready at a drop of a hat. She'd wash it and iron it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'd be ready, boy. She'd keep up with the band going uptown. She was a stout woman. Mm-hmm. And all she could, my older brother, he was the head of our, he'd tell them what song to play, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When he hold up his finger, not play number one or number two, boy, she'd almost faint. Oh, look at my boy. Yeah, look at Dickie. That's all she would see. No one else but him.
Mm-hmm.
Look at Dickie holding up his fingers.
This was the American... Is that American Legion post still around, or is it...
No, that was World War One.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a... I had my Uncle Pin. What we used to call... When we... Our discharge button, ruptured duck, we call it.
Mm-hmm.
I had his pin. It's up in my building somewhere, but it had colored veteran on it.
Mm-hmm.
World War. Mm-hmm. He was in the Navy. Mm-hmm. My uncle was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but his pin had colored veteran.
Interesting. You're. Are you still a member of the Legion or not? Or did you ever join?
They coming up with a new Legion, and they asked me would I be a member. I said yes, I'd be happy to.
Mm-hmm.
But they come and start a new Legion here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They,
in the parade, you find them. Yeah, they, few of them in there, not in the parade. In the next parade we have there, you find them in that.
Mm-hmm.
But they, I told them, if they really want to go, if they get a drill team, boy, that would attract more to join. A nice drill team, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, would you say that being a part of the drum and bugle corps was instrumental in making sure that you didn't get in trouble? Or was there any trouble around here to get into?
Wasn't too much you could get into. We were so busy trying to get movie fare to go to the movie. It wasn't but a nickel. But that nickel was hard to come by here.
Mm-hmm.
We would go out to the city dump, find scrap metal, bring it up, and the Iron Man would come and get it. And all that, if you think about it, all that stuff was going to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
All that scrap metal, what we were gathering up.
Mm.
And they made bullets and
they made bullets
and stuff out of that scrap metal. Yep.
Wow.
But we would do that. We'd gather up. We'd go and pick blackberries. Where the ballpark is, that was nothing but a field there. We'd go pick blackberries, go and sell them. Anything to get show fare. And it wasn't but a nickel. I remember I went to the movie, and I was used to squat down and put my nickel up there. And she said, Jack, you can stand up straight from now on. It's going to be a dime for you. I like to have a heart attack. I said, oh, no. She don't know what I went through to get the nickel.
So is the movie, the drum and bugle corps, marble playing, and baseball.
That was it.
Where was the movie theater?
Hmm?
Where was the
right
theater?
On Atlantic Avenue. The first one, first movie I ever been to was right between 2nd Street and 3rd Street, where that gift shop is over there. I go to that coffee shop on the side all the time. But it's a gift shop over there. It used to be the old Ritz Theater used to be there. The first one I ever been to. And then later on they moved down... by 8th, between 8th and 7th, up in there. Because that house right across the street, that two-story house with the church on now, it was a retired colonel used to live there. And his brother-in-law, he was a retired major. He married the colonel's sister. And we were standing over there by the movie. We'd go 2 o'clock, the movie start 2:30. We'd be there sometime 1 o'clock waiting for it to start. And this colonel came across the street, and he said, "You." I said, "Come here a minute." I walked over to him. He said, "I'm looking for somebody to do some work for me. Would you be interested? Would you?" I said, "You look just the type of guy I want." I said, "Okay." And I went. What he wanted me to do, I had to carry one armload of wood upstairs where he lived. He was upstairs to his fireplace, and that was about it. And he didn't want me to do nothing for his brother-in-law, the major. He said, "I hired you. You don't do nothing for this guy." And after that, he said, everybody started a little victory garden in the backyard. So he said, "I'm going to start a victory garden." So I helped him. We had about 4 or 5 rows, and we planted this victory garden. He said, "Next, I'm going to build a chicken house." And build this little chicken house, a fancy one. All you had to do, go to the back of the chicken house, raise up a flap, and get the eggs out. We really fixed that fine. And I worked for him. And one day, we was out there sitting in the car. He said, "I got to go in the house. I'm not feeling very well." He was having a heart attack. And a couple of days later, he died. And the major came out and said, "Well, now you can work for me." I said, "No, I don't think so. I wouldn't work for him. I didn't even want to go to that house no more." Because that colonel was such a nice guy to me. I used to work to that church too, right next to it. My brother started the job. Was a pastor there by the name of Reverend Late. He was always late with your money too.
And
he would always hold back some of your money. And my brother quit. He came up to my mother's house. Boy, he was raising all kind of saying, "I don't like nobody to quit on my job." No. And my mother, he didn't know who he was dealing with. She ran him and said, "You good." And then I took the job. I went there and started working. Started doing me the same way. And he was also a member of the draft board here, too. So he helped put my brother in the Army Affairs. But I didn't mind going. I wanted to go. But I quit working for him. Because down in the back part of that church was a little office. His wife was a nurse, I think. And she used to make insect repellent and bottle it up and take it. I'd take a case of it over to the store right across the street, and she sold it to them. I was doing that on church time, you know, when I was supposed to be the janitor of the church, cleaning church. I'd be down there helping them bottle the stuff and labeling it and carrying it over.
Speaking of medical stuff, what was the medical care and hospitals and stuff like that?
We had two doctors here, Dr. Humphrey and Dr. Bunker. Well, not many people wanted to go to Dr. Bunker. They thought he was a horse doctor. But everybody, when he went to Dr. Humphrey, he was a mild-mannered man, and he'd come in smiling, and you felt better right away. When he walked in, they made house calls during that time. And
These were white doctors,
yeah,
black?
Or white doctors. Yeah.
Were there any black doctors in town?
I heard it was one before my time, but I didn't know about him.
Mm-hmm.
But he was Dr. Humphrey,
mm-hmm,
good doctor. One Easter Sunday, I broke my arm in three places. And he came there and put this ether, put this cotton in this glass and poured ether on it and had me sniffing it. I heard him say, yeah, he's asleep now. Boy, and he reached down and grabbed my arm and jerked it. I jumped that hard at that. Yeah. He straightened my arm out, though. But it was, we had a good time growing up here. I don't have no complaints. So,
what was the big holiday event? When you guys got together? What was the?
Had a 4th of July barbecue or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm. What would that be?
We had them. Somebody would be roasting something, you know, and you just stop by. Just like, let me tell you one I thought was very funny. We had a big table out there in the yard when they had the shrimp festival. And we cooking and carried things. Had two tables out there stretched out. And everybody, family and all of them, was coming there eating, you know. And this couple were walking by. So they just walk right in, grab them a plate, start fixing food. My wife said, these friends of yours, I had never seen them before. I thought they were friends of yours. She said, I don't know. So what was funny, this guy get on his phone and telling his friends how to come to our house and get all the free food they want. I couldn't believe that. We just laugh at them. Yeah.
Wow. That is so
I wanna funny. I was a they had a we had a we had a coin club here. We were collecting coins, a bunch of us.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the guys who collect coins at one time or another have been to my house. Mm-hmm. We swap coins and things, you know. And then they decided to organize a coin club. Well, this one man had a plumbing shop. He broke up the coin club because he didn't want me in it. I was the only black in it.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, well, if he can't be in it, I don't want to be in it. And they got out of it and organized a new coin club and made me the president.
Wow.
That trophy up there on top of the TV up there, the highest trophy.
Mm-hmm.
I won that for the best display, coin display.
Okay.
I had a beautiful collection of during that time I specialized in Olympic coins.
What time frame was that?
I can't remember.
It was rough, just rough. 80s?
Probably the 80s, yeah. Yeah, we had a good coin club. And a lady used to run a package store out on 8th Street there.
Mm-hmm.
And that lady, some of the dealers from Jacksonville, they joined our coin club, not to be members. I knew what they were joining, so they could bring their coins over here and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady would buy coins like you wouldn't believe. She'd see a bunch of coins these guys bring. She'd write out a check. I'll take them. And then he'd go to his car and come up with some more. She said, tear that check up. I'll take them too.
Mm-hmm.
That woman, when she died, I heard her son-in-law, I heard a lot of people was out there digging up around her place looking for her coin.
Wow.
She had some stuff out there.
Wow. What was her name?
Miss Cora Wining.
Cora.
She had a liquor store.
Okay.
It was another liquor store right where I go and have coffee at.
Where do you go for your coffee?
Right between between 2nd and 3rd Street.
Seattle's Best, I think it's called.
Huh?
Seattle's Best, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, I think so. Where that open space there, right side, that used to be a liquor store in that open space, Peter Pappas. Mm-hmm. And he'd get to drinking, and he'd run into two or three cars. He wouldn't hit one. He'd always hit two or three cars, you know. Never go to jail. I said, why? And my uncle said, wait till he get broke, then he'll go to jail. But as long as he got money, keeping him up.
Well, what was the biggest change that you really have seen in your lifetime in the downtown, on Center Street and so forth? You talk about the liquor store. And what would you say would be the most significant change that's happened?
Well, I take my wife down there, and we sit on the bench, and I meet a lot of friendly people here. Come here, visitors. We just start talking, and it's a big difference, you know. It used to be a police officer around here. As teenagers, we used to take our...
Ready? Yeah. You were just talking about the changes, and you and your wife would go down and...
we'd go downtown, and we'd meet so many people, and... people we'd never seen before, something like that, could be visitors, and the people are so friendly. And when they ask us, are you from here? Yeah, this is a lovely place. And you know, I feel the same way too. Of all the places I've been to, I wouldn't trade this town for no other town I've been to or heard about.
That's a remarkable testimony. What about the politics? You've seen it all down here.
We always had the good old buddy system here. You know,
mm-hmm.
You the good old buddy. One time when I was working out the container, it was, I don't know how many men working the container. It was a standard joke.
Mm-hmm.
Are you running? Everybody wanted to be the constable. Mm-hmm. Ron here.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be passing out cards every day, and boy, I'd have come home with a stack of cards with these guys passing out, you know. They run in for constable. And I fell out with one of my best friends. He's my best friend now, but he wasn't. He and I used to work together. He was mean and he was nasty.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Jack, I ain't got no education, but you can't tell it, can you? I said, hell, I can't. How can you tell it? I said, time you open your mouth. Boy, he got so mad with me, he could have killed me. Oh.
Did you ever think about running for any offices yourself or get involved in any of that?
No, I like to be able to sleep at night. I wouldn't want nobody calling me saying, you didn't do this, do that. No. But I collect political stuff.
Mm.
If you get a minute, I'm going to have to show you my collection out there.
Well, I'll come back.
It ain't going to take but a minute.
Okay. The, we've been at this for over an hour. And I promised you that I wouldn't take up all of your day, but here's the time where we kind of free flow. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you'd like to, make sure that the Heritage Keepers has?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one man I would like to mention, Mr. Samuel. I don't know. That's the only name I know. But he had a big farm right back of Container and another farm up on the last hill going to Old Town, McClure Hill, this mm-hmm. hill over there, a big farm over there. And the mill came, had wiped his farm out there, and the CC cap came, and they camped over there where his other farm was. So that he was wiped out.
CC farm?
Yeah.
What is the CC?
Oh, you don't... CC camp.
Yeah.
That was conservation. The CC boys. It was just like they wore uniforms and clear lots, and that's what Roosevelt put men to work.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, CC, man, they were just like they were SS troopers around here. they was something else. And this building on 10th.
Well, wait a minute. Oh, let's stop. Let's talk about the CC. You know that? Oh. You said there's something else. Let's talk about.
A lot of our leading citizens came here looking for job with the CC camp.
Mm-hmm.
Over on that street over there, two First Missionary Baptist best deacons, they came here, the CC camp brought mm-hmm. them here. And another guy, very active in political and everything else around here, CC camp brought him here, Louis Faison.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Louis Faison, Deacon Clarence Harvey, and Deacon Joe Harden. They came here during the CC camp. And but we used to go cutting a limb off a big cedar tree to make a Christmas tree out of it. And boy, them CC boys run us. God. Man, they was something else around there.
Mm-hmm.
My mother used to wash for them. She was tickled to death to get. They give you a little bundle of clothes, you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe two pair of pants and a shirt, a couple of shirts.
Mm-hmm.
She'd have the names on them and everything like that, and had this little pot which she heat coal in and iron,
mm-hmm.
and she'd be ironing half of the night, ironing their bundles of clothes,
mm-hmm.
and she was so tickled because. I remember she said, I got 22 bundles of clothes. And she was so tickled because mm-hmm. she'd have a little money, maybe a dollar each or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they came to pick up the clothes. We carried them around there. And they said, we'll pay you when we get paid. They think they were getting around about $20 a month or something like that. We'll pay you when we get paid. And this commanding officer came in there and said, pay this lady now. Y'all got paid yesterday, and you're planning on going to leave here tomorrow. Pay this lady now. And made them pay her.
Wow.
Boys, they felt bad, too.
Mm-hmm.
She got her money.
Wow.
Yeah, they was going to skip town.
So the CC camp, the reputation of the CC camp, I take it from the way you said that is that you
we avoid
that,
them.
You weren't that happy with them, is that what?
No, well, we weren't that, but they had a job. And I had a cousin who was, he never worked, but he always, he worked, because he always would give us some change, you know. But he'd get mad if we would call him Pete the Tramp, ran all the way from the CC camp. Boy, he'd get mad when we say that to him. Because he went to the CC camp and stayed about a month or so and came back. He couldn't take that. It was just like army life, you know. Mm-hmm.
How long were they in and around?
I don't know how long. But it was something Roosevelt to put men to work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So they cleared fields and build roads, and they did some of everything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because it was no work. It was depression time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that CC camp put a lot of people to work and brought a lot of good people here to this town.
Okay. Yep. Well, I'm glad that I did ask that question because I never would have gotten that
CC
passion
camp.
About the CC camp, and I, you know, honestly, I didn't know. So, what are the other big influences that would pass through that you would have us record for the researchers? Anything at all?
right now. Oh, Ron here, coming up here. Mm-hmm. Oh, I wanted to tell you about Mr. Samuel, mm-hmm. who fed so many people. People go out to his farm, and he never left empty-handed. He always, go ahead and get you some potatoes, get you some this. He always, he fed so many people around here, you wouldn't believe. You know, and he just was wiped out overnight because the mill came, and where they built the mill, it messed up his farm right behind the mill. And the CC boys, where his other farm was wiped out just overnight. He never done nothing but farm all his life, as far as I know.
And whatever happened to Mr. Samuels?
He moved in a house on Hickory Street, I think, two-story house. But you could tell he wasn't near the same. I guess he would be thinking about everything wiped out. Mm-hmm. And he just stayed upstairs, and it wasn't long he died. It's a young girl, man. She was a little girl. She was raised out there to his farm. I don't know what relationship she was. She lived here. And another lady on 14th Street, she died not long ago. Her daughter was a commissioner in Miami. But Janie McCullough, she used to be on Mr. Samuel's horse and his mule and wagon selling vegetables. Yeah, he had a mule, and the two women used to be on the mule going around selling vegetables. Mm-hmm. But most of the thing, all you had to do, go out there, give you all you want. Mm-hmm. And he fed a lot of people there in Fernandina. And we had some bad things happen there in Fernandina too. We kids could, on that street next over there, some of the leading church members, First Missionary Baptist Church, before they died, lived over there. But it also, two places over there sold moonshine too. Yeah, one man was killed over there. Guy picked up a knife or a fork from the table. He was arguing. He picked up a fork and just burst the skin right in his heart. And he walked home. I guess he looked at it and he just died. Yeah. And he was the guy who did it was just a nicer guy as you ever want to meet. Quiet, humble guy. Mm-hmm. But I think this guy, after he seen he was stabbed in the heart, to the heart, he just scared to death and died. Mm-hmm. But we could go there, pull the sheet back, look. I looked at about three or four people who was killed here. A man was getting ready to go to work one morning. The wife shot him. Mm-hmm. I don't know what for. We, the little kids, we go there, pull the sheet back.
What, at the funeral home?
No, to the house before they get it.
Oh, before they come get it?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was... Yeah, I believe I've seen about five or six bodies like that when I was about 10 or something like that. Mm-hmm. First casualty I seen over in Germany. Our kitchen was almost connected with a grave registration unit over in Germany. Mm-hmm. And guy be standing there with the mess gear eating. Let me see who they brought in. Man, we had some hard-hearted guys. I thought about that. Mm-hmm. And they go out there, and it was a first lieutenant. He stepped on a mine. Mm-hmm. And we saw him. Mm-hmm. But we see two or three just about every day come in. They bring in. But we never, in Germany, we never stayed nowhere We was always on the move. Mm-hmm. I would come to command and say, we gonna be here a few days. 5 o'clock that morning, whistle blow, let's move it, move it, move it. Trucks out there waiting. And we gone. Mm-hmm. We was always on the go. I remember I had a bad case of tonsillitis. And we was living in this big building. Big two-story building, two or three. I don't know what it was, but down in the cellar was a big barrel, the biggest barrel I ever seen, mm-hmm. and a manhole. And them guys go down this hole and drink that stuff, call it schnapps.
Mm-hmm.
And you had the tar rope, pull them out, the hole, pull him out. You're all drunk up. and we were stationed in this big building, and I had a tonsillitis, and they carried me to a field hospital about 4 or 5 miles from where we were, mm-hmm. out there in the woods. And the day I got out there, I was burning up with a fever, and I was laying in this cot, and that time I looked and seen them start moving stuff, and they stopped carrying everything, loading them up in the truck. But I didn't care what was going on. I was hurting so bad. And they moved everything but me and this cot. I was out there in the woods by myself. And happened so somebody thought about the new patient they brought in and came back out there and got me and carried me next door to the house where I was to start with. The hospital had moved right next door. And they carried me in there the next morning. And boy, looked like he had stuck a pair of scissors down my throat, and I could hear him cutting my tonsils out. Golly, sweat was pouring off me. Golly, that hurt. That hurt.
Wow.
But I got him out. And the funny thing, after I'd been out to service a long time ago, I had another sore throat. I went to the doctor here. He said, you got tonsillitis. And I laughed at him. I said, Doc, my tonsil was taken out in Germany. He said, well, they're back. I didn't know that before.
That is fascinating. That is fascinating.
I've seen quite a few. When I was on the ship going to the Pacific, it was a guy sitting there. Every day I'd see him up on deck like this, holding it. And I say, I know this guy, but that's not the guy I know from Fernandina, because this is a marvelous little guy. Oh, yak, 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 all the time, you know. I said, if I go up there tomorrow, he's sitting up there, I'm going to talk to him. And I went to him, I said, hey, ain't you Sambo? Call him Sambo from Fernandina. Yep. I said, what's the matter? Man, I done lost all my money. That's all he did, gamble. We was on the ship for 42 days going to the Pacific. We left Marseille and went through the Canal Zone,
mm-hmm.
got in the Pacific, and we was right off the Marshall Islands when we heard they dropped an atomic bomb on Japan. Well, we never gave it a thought. What is one bomb going to do when we see 2,000 bombers going over to bomb Germany? We never. And then a couple of days later, say they drop another one. And then third, say the war is over. And it was three ships. We were going three ships, one right behind each other. And all at once, guns start blasting away. I never seen so many ships in my life. I don't know where in the world all those ships came from. But it was us. Three ships going all the whole while. And when they say the war was over, ships came from everywhere and blasting away. God. We thought our ship was going to turn around and bring us back home. We wound up in the Philippines, where I stayed there 7 months after the war. And I was a corporal. And they made me, I was acting sergeant. They made me supply sergeant to a Japanese prison camp. We had about 3,000 Japs in our prison camp. And if any got sick in our prison camp, we had to take them to the big prison camp, Lupau prison camp. He had lots of them over there, and exchange them for three what was well. Because if a company need four or five men to do some work, we'd send them out, you know, different company, do some work. And the only reason we had guards around this prison camp, not thinking they're going to escape, because they didn't have nowhere to go in the Philippines. Them Philippines was a group called the Hucks. They would have killed them. And so they, that's the guards, was to keep the Filipinos out. But I was supply sergeant, and I used to have to go to all different directions to pick up supplies. And I passed by Wall City all the time. And they opened up, just when I got ready to come home, it was a big, huge cave there. And a lot of civilians ran in this cave when they were shelling Philippine Manila. And they just sealed that cave up. And all, when I got ready to come home, they was opening that cave. And you could smell that. You never forget that scent. You smell all them dead bodies was down in that cave. And they was taking them out.
We, Mr. Delaney, it is, we need to really wrap up. And I thank you. I really wish that we had time to just sit and at some point, you and I need to sit down. You said you don't drink beer, but you know, I do. So we need to sit down and drink beer.
I don't knock that.
But
I think a lot of other things taste better. I'd rather have me a Pepsi anytime.
Yeah, maybe we'll do that. But I just want to, on behalf of the museum, to just thank you for your recollections and for sharing your insight on just how things came to be to create the person that I respect, named Jack Delaney. And I count it an honor and a privilege to have been able to talk with you today.
My pleasure.
And that said, I will take the opportunity to say this concludes the interview with Mr. Jack Delaney of Fernandina Beach.